This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Coming up on Columbia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, we're going to be talking to the director of War Child, the NGO aimed at protecting children's rights in and pulling them out of poverty in areas particularly affected by conflict and other such nefarious problems. So we'll be talking to the Canadian director of War Child International. His name is Ramin Shazamani. He's of Iranian descent. He's living here in Bogota. We're going to be talking about the peace accords, the peace dialogues taking place in Havana, Cuba, between the FARC and the Colombian government. We're going to be talking about some of the ways that War Child work with local NGOs to enable to return children back to a state of childhood after having seen and suffered so much. Not an easy show today, but definitely one that's worth talking about, definitely that's worth listening to. That's me, Richard McCall, on Columbia Calling with the director of War Child, Ramin Shazamani. Thank you.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota today. I'm talking later on with Ramin Shazamani, the director of War Child Colombia. War Child is an NGO designed to pull children out of poverty, provide an education, and protect and promote children's rights, child rights. They have most of their projects in Afghanistan and the Congo and other regions that we associate with conflicts. And of course, they have an office here in Colombia. And, you know, we're often talking about the fluff and travel and how great Colombia is, but there is a reality here. There is a reality about an ongoing conflict. And of course, one of the very visible sections of the conflict and those most affected by what goes on in the countryside are, of course, Colombia's children. So we'll be talking to Ramin Shazamani a little bit later about War Child War Child's projects here in Colombia and what he sees for the future and how to improve children's rights and children's lives here in Colombia. So I think we need to think about that a little bit more. I mean, out of the dozens and dozens of NGOs that are here in Colombia, it's nice to see, you know, something, an NGO that's so, let's say, focused on one thing. They're not trying to put an umbrella over everything and say, well, we're going to try and solve everything. No, it's a war child. The deal is we're going to help the children. We're going to return, playtime. We're going to turn lives to the children, of course. And, you know, as the Colombian conflict has ticked on and on, and we're talking about five decades plus of conflict, how many generations of children have lost childhood? How many have lost lives? We're going to be addressing some of these topics and more as we come into the second segment of this show. But we need to reflect on these facts and these figures. And if we think of all the ones that slip through the net as well, I mean, there's only a certain amount of children who will be sort of, processed through the welfare state, through the child welfare services here in Colombia. How about all those who don't go through the child welfare services, who aren't accounted for, who continue on the periphery of society, let's say, maybe begging at traffic lights in downtown Bogota, or suffering from addiction or exploitation? Of course, it's a serious issue. And, you know, while I try not to make this show too heavy, and I try and always keep it as informal as a chat, we do need to discuss the serious issues here in Colombia. We do need to, and as expats and as residents, or as, you know, global citizens interested in what is going on in Colombia and what is going on in the world about us, I think we need to address these situations. So we'll be talking to Ramin, and we'll be going into his office in the leafy environs of La Soledad, a beautiful section of Bogota known, or La Soledad is the barrio, but the main road that goes through is called Parkway, and it's sort of a more contemporary section of Bogota, just sort of off the edge of the colonial Candelaria area and Teo Sequillo, and it was sort of built as an expansion, and it's got that sort of whole, you know, feeling of 1940s modernity to it. But it's very pleasant, very leafy, wide avenues, a place to live definitely when you're thinking about Bogota, thinking about moving here. Very high ceiling homes and still just about affordable. And that's another thing. I mean, Colombia is not an inexpensive place to visit. So we'll be talking about all of these things, and you know what? We're going to raise the issue of the peace dialogues, which are taking place between the FARC and the Colombian government at the moment in Havana, and the 6 points that they're addressing. We're gonna put these into context with how this is going to affect Ramin's work and War Child's work. And I think one of the most interesting things, and one of the most exciting and dynamic issues that we can address as well, and we can talk about, is that War Child really do try and think outside of the box. They really do try and be creative with regards to how to bring children back to some sort of state of being a child again. So we'll be talking about where they work and what they're doing, that'll be the show. That'll be the show today, talking all about this, and I hope that we can talk about some success stories about child combatants leaving the rank and file of either the sort of former paramilitaries, now the BACRIM, the gangs, the FARC, the ELN, and other sort of nefarious groups out there. We need to protect Colombia's future. So, not an easy show to listen to, perhaps, but certainly one that's very poignant. It's timely because of the peace dialogues taking place, and of course a little bit because of what's going on in Bogota. And we have a mayor in charge who's not loved by many, hated by a great deal, we've been talking about this over the weeks, that Gustavo Petro perhaps is too much of a politician, but not enough of a politician at the same time. He just doesn't know how to do the dealings with the right and the left. And therefore he comes off as arrogant and, divisive. Anyway, but he's the first mayor to truly consider southern Bogota, to truly take into account that there is a socio-economic divide between northern Bogota and southern Bogota. And even when you say the Calle de los Comuneros, Calle Sexta, which is, it's just the divide. If you cross that road, you just see it in the architecture, in the in the ramshackle houses, in the dress of the people, in the infrastructure. It's one of those extreme divides. And there always are in sections of real estate anywhere in the world, even if you're thinking London, if you're thinking New York, or you're thinking Paris, you can always see these things. But in Bogota, it's so extreme. If you were to, for example, to go up to the top of Monserrate, the viewpoint of this church, this pilgrimage site on the top of, way up on a mountaintop overlooking Bogota, you can see the divide. You can see the invasiones, the invasions of displaced people that are sort of poured over the hillside into the south of Bogota. So we're going to be talking about these sections. And Gustavo Petro, love him or hate him, has been addressing this part of Bogota. And until this section of Bogota is pulled out and pulled up to a relatively decent level of infrastructure and society and schooling and health, then Bogota will not continue to grow as a major international business center. If you want this city to be an international city, a city of business, a city of commerce and culture, Southern Bogota needs to be looked at. Southern Bogota needs to be dealt with. And Gustavo Petro is doing this. And so, maybe this is why he's rubbed up people the wrong way. But anyway, we'll be talking about Southern Bogota with Ramin Shazamani, the director of War Child, because many of the reinsertados, the people reinserted back into society, the demobilized guerrillas or displaced people, are reinserted into barrios and communities in southern Bogota, such as Soacha. Soacha is a huge area of southern Bogota, and so you're getting paramilitaries in one section, you're getting FARC guerrillas in another section, you're having the child welfare system trying to raise children there, and so this is a section of Bogota that cannot be ignored. So don't go away. Check us out at www.columbiacallingradio.com, on Twitter at Columbia Calling, and of course my website richardmccall.com. We'll be talking about all these things and more coming up with Ramin Shazamani. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Thank you.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
You've got questions about Columbia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Columbia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Columbia? You'll find your answers at columbia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's columbia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota talking to Ramin Shazamani, who's in charge of War Child, the War Child NGO here in Colombia. Welcome on the show, Ramin.
Thank you, Richard.
You're very welcome. Now, Ramin, you're originally from Iran. You moved to Canada. You're now in Colombia. You're a citizen of the world. You've been everywhere, basically. And having talked to you briefly before we do this interview, I know that you've worked in the Congo. I know that you've worked in Afghanistan. You've always worked with War Child, or has it been with other NGOs?
In Afghanistan, Congo, and Colombia, I've worked with War Child, but in other countries with other NGOs.
Tell me a little bit then about War Child, the history of this NGO. What is its mission?
War Child is an international organization and is based in Amsterdam, Netherlands. There are actually three War Childs globally. There's War Child UK, War Child Canada, and War Child Netherlands. I work directly with War Child Netherlands, but we are all sister organizations. And we work in countries that are affected by conflict. And our main objective is to alleviate or prevent the impact of conflict on children. And War Child started over 20 years ago in Kosovo, actually, with the conflict there. And it was the objective was to see how we can use creativity, mm-hmm. creative methods, creative learning approaches with children that have been affected by war in order to alleviate the psychosocial impact of the conflict on these children. So that is still remains one of the big threads of our work, mm-hmm. but we have three lines of work.
Okay.
One is, as I said, psychosocial support for children affected mm-hmm. by conflict. Another is education for children also that have been affected by conflict. And a third is protection of the children that are in conflict-affected areas.
I can only imagine that you have plenty of work here in Colombia.
Unfortunately, you're right. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that is the case. It seems that the war in Colombia is not on the radar anymore in the world, but it really is still going on, especially in remote areas of the country and in many areas of the country.
Yeah. Now, War Child works everywhere, Afghanistan, Africa, works with displaced people, of course. I mean, I think the latest figure we got here in Colombia is something like 5 million internally displaced people, the second only to Sudan and Darfur and those areas. So it's pretty horrific figures. In your experience, having worked in places like the Congo and Afghanistan, how does Colombia compare?
Well, each country is very unique. Mm-hmm. The conflict is also very different in each country. The causes of conflict might not be that different. Mm-hmm. Usually it does go back to resources and injustice and those big line items. But the conflict and how it evolves is different. And Colombia, as we know, has had a conflict for more than 50 years. Some Colombians will say more than 200 years. But the conflict in Colombia is a conflict which is very much taking place in rural areas. It is very much has evolved into a conflict that it started very ideological, but has evolved into a conflict that has to do with control of resources and areas and trafficking of illicit material. Mm-hmm. The conflict is also one that you don't necessarily see in the cities. So when you are in Bogota or Medellin or Cali, you actually go, well, this is a really nice country. It's fantastic. What's the problem? It is only when you go in the areas that the different armed groups are present is when you start to really see the impact of the conflict. And you have to be aware of it. You have to talk to the people, because you still will not see it. It's not in your face.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting point you would say. It's not present. I mean, as you say, in your face. And I think that's what a lot of people take away from Colombia. And they come just on a brief, let's say, a trip. Oh, no, Colombia was great. There's not even the hint or suggestion of an aggression, perhaps beyond a nervous policeman or a greater military presence. But you know, you get out there and you notice, you can feel an aggression, you feel an atmosphere that's more tense. But again, you don't see, it's not like there are two fronts lined up against one another in a trench warfare. There are no traditional lines. It is rural and it's urban, and that's, I think Colombia itself is grappling with this idea. Would you say that Bogota is trying to strive forward as a capital, as an international business hub, but lots of the countryside is being left way behind in semi-medieval situations?
The distinction between urban and rural in Colombia is very evident. Mm-hmm. For people that have had an opportunity to go to their rural communities, they will see that the poverty is quite intense and the lack of services is quite intense. But in a city like Bogota, you can be almost in any metropolitan big city in the world. Although within Bogota, there are also neighborhoods that are very poor and have been very affected by especially different gangs, let's say. Mm-hmm. I think the disparity, which is very common in Latin America, but very much so in Colombia, is between the extreme wealth and extreme poverty. Extreme wealth is seen within the big cities, and extreme poverty is rampant in many parts of the country.
And so, like you said, you know, the conflict or the war began out of ideological beliefs, land reform, the political beliefs that has now gone into including the transportation, the transshipment of illicit materials. When you say that, we're talking about obviously the coca paste for the use of the production of cocaine, which obviously everybody knows, but also, it's becoming more into the sort of the fore of the press at the moment is the illegal mining and taking tungsten out of the rivers in the south and various other things. And of course, this is making your job, the complexities are increasing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in Colombia is a very resource-rich country, and the coca plant is only one of those resources. There is a lot of gold, a lot of coltan, a lot of coal, a lot of almost everything in this country. And the illegal groups have also managed to tap into these resources and are managing these resources, which makes it very, very complex when it comes to using of children within by these armed groups, because they are able to give them money and use them within these different illicit economic activities that they have, and also feed the conflict and continue the conflict.
And of course, this makes it very difficult when they are in regions where there is no state presence and, of course, no economic resources in terms of sort of traditional economic resources.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes it much more complex. We just, with a number of other organizations, were able to do an investigation in Buenaventura, which, as you know, is actually a city. It's a port city. It is the biggest port for Colombia, where a large amount of the resources of Colombia come in and out. So you would think that it would actually be a very wealthy city. It is an extremely poor city with very limited state capacity. And if you go even in the rural communities, you go in the rivers that lead out of Buenaventura, it's even worse. And the different armed groups, there's controlling much of what is going on within the city and the economy, and using children at a very, very young age, at the age of 8, to do surveillance within the communities to see who's coming and going. Then they will use the kids to use the arms and then eventually they will use them to do trafficking and unfortunately also killing other people.
We're talking to Ramin Shazamani, who's of Iran, well, born in Iran, grown up in Canada, and is leading the NGO War Child here in Colombia. We're talking about War Child's efforts and work here in Colombia. We're talking about the complexities of the Colombian situation, the Colombian conflict. So don't go away, we'll be right back. This is Colombia Calling, and I'm your host, Richard McConnell.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. It seems almost silly to ask, but if you're going to be living abroad, why wouldn't you want to learn the language? Do you want to make life more difficult for yourself? If you're going to the time, expense, and risk of living abroad, give yourself the best chance for success by actually being able to communicate with your new neighbors, at least on some level of proficiency. A recent article in Escape from America magazine caught our attention. In it, writer Paul Allen wrote about his experience at a conference in Vienna, attended by folks from all over Europe and the Middle East. Allen was amazed at the level of English skill exhibited by attendees who were using it as their second or even third language. Yes, English is still the language of business, but that sentiment is not going to do you much good when you're trying to buy a bar of soap in Managua. Don't be the ugly American who thinks the rest of the world should bend to your accident of birth. Allen went on to quote a 2005 European Commission study, which reported that the following percent of adults in these countries were able to converse in English. Sweden, 85%, Denmark, 83%, Netherlands, 79%, and Luxembourg, 66%. Add to these amazingly high numbers that over 50% speak English in Finland, Slovenia, Austria, Belgium, and Germany. Kind of makes us look inadequate, huh? A Dutch friend who Allen spoke with told him that she believes that American television had a great influence, since the shows run with Dutch subtitles rather than being dubbed. A last tidbit for you. English is the third most spoken language in the world, after Mandarin Chinese and Spanish. Americans planning on living abroad in a Central American country, take heed. They speak Spanish there. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network, and we're talking to Ramin Shazamani, the CEO, or the what's your position?
Officially the director of War Child.
The director of War Child here, War Child Colombia. And we've been talking about the problems in Buenaventura. Buenaventura is an enormous port city on the Pacific coast, the southern Pacific coast in Colombia. For those of you who know Colombia, the Pacific coast is largely undeveloped. You've got a couple of ports like Tumaco, Buenaventura, and Guapi, and then the rest is really, you know, a tiny towns. It's that largely Afro community, incredibly impoverished, rife with all of the problems that one would expect in a conflict situation. I have to say, anecdotally, I've written pieces for the mainstream press about Buenaventura and have received threats on account of these pieces. I found it to be one of the most aggressive places I visited when I worked for an NGO years ago, WWF. They sent me out there to study something, and I wrote what I saw, and then promised myself and promised my family that I would never return to Buenaventura, and then found myself being sent out there again when I moved to Colombia. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I just feel they did a BBC Dispatches many years ago, I think in 2007, did a documentary about Buenaventura, and just basically declared it as it was open war on the streets. But I would say it's not open war. I mean, because everything in Colombia is sort of, it's slightly behind a wall, let's say, behind a facade. There's a great deal of aggression, a great deal of threat that goes on, and Buenaventura is perfectly that. And so you're finding children as young as eight being used as sort of lookouts, spies, and then they're using the arms, I imagine sicarios, which are the sort of the horrible situation of child contract killers. Let's talk about War Child's intervention. When you get involved, how do you turn back the clock on a situation like that to a child who's been so exposed to so much sort of just, you know, heinous activities and cruelty? How do you return them to being a child?
Yeah. Well, here in Colombia, we work with local organizations that are based in the different regions where we work. So in Buenaventura, we are working with one of the local organizations there. And what we concentrate on is using creativity to tap into the natural nature of children, which want to learn and want to explore and want to have opportunities.
Yeah.
One of the main things that drives these children into these groups is that, one, the economic situation that they're in and the lack of opportunities that they have and how they don't see a future for themselves. Two is probably a lack of parental or an adult support.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly, the services are not there to fill in those gaps. So in an organization like War Child, working with local organizations, we try to do what is necessary to fill those gaps.
Mm-hmm.
But we do it through theater, we do it through play, we do it through using of computers so that kids learn about computers and that can use them in their own futures. We do it through sports. And so there are many different methodologies. Mm-hmm. And one of the main things that we focus on is really psychosocial support, which we have a specific methodology on this that takes children and tries to build their what we call abilities for life.
Okay.
And really being there with the child to give them support, because that's one of the things that is missing for them, so that they have a different reference point than just the art groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that we find is successful.
Yes. So when you're doing these, let's say you're thinking outside of the box, you're using therapies which are, I would say, relatively new, but and the success rate is high.
Yeah, it is. The children that are within the projects, very seldom leave to go into armed groups.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, within the same communities, there are children that are within the armed groups. And how do you take those children out is a very, very strong challenge for all of us. And we believe by providing these services that the kids mm-hmm. will see another perspective
mm-hmm.
and the community will see another perspective. In one of it, too, as we're talking about it, there are these what is called invisible borders. So the different groups control different parts of within even one neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids cannot go from one street to the next. And if they do, there is a high risk of them being killed.
Yeah.
And so what we try to do is see how, for example, work in the different schools within these different communities
mm-hmm.
and hopefully try to break down these barriers and these borders. But it is a challenge. I cannot say that it's not a difficult job and that it is 100% successful, because it's not.
From what I know from Buenaventura as well, people are telling me they sleep with their doors open at night to allow the armed groups through. As passageways between these areas, so that they're not caught up in the conflict, they're not caught up in the running battles at night. I mean, it's not people sleeping with the deadbolt thrown or anything. No, they're sleeping with the doors open because the situation is so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some of the neighborhoods, the houses are so precarious anyways that they really don't have any locks to begin with. But this, unfortunately, is one example. We, as a war child, also work in Choco,
mm-hmm.
and we work in north of Cauca, in Putumayo, and also even here in Bogota. And what there are slight differences, but the conflict is present in all of these areas,
mm-hmm.
and in many other areas of Colombia where we don't work, and the children are always affected by the conflict, and they're always the victims, and the victims that don't really have a voice or opportunity.
Let's say they don't have a voice, but they're definitely visible. I mean, they're not it's the youth, of course, these children, if we're to take it from a photojournalist's point of view, is always the most impacting image.
Sure.
Is that of a child in a war zone or, crying or seated. Now, we're sitting here in La Soledad, in your head offices. It's this leafy, wide avenue part of Bogota. Which sections of Bogota in the capital city would you be working with, which would be so far removed of where we are right now? What are you doing exactly in the capital?
Well, we used to have a project in Soacha,
mm-hmm.
Which is a neighborhood in Bogota, which is very, very poor, and there are many gangs within that area. Right now, we actually have a project which is with the children and journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you empower children through journalism? And it is a beautiful project which helps kids that are have been affected and are in the protective section of the ISEBREF, which is the mm-hmm. Colombian government agency that takes care of children in need of protection. and working with these kids to learn about journalism, to learn about all the different aspects of this vast work, but also to give them confidence, to build their self-esteem, to work with them on how to have confidence and with other people, because they have been affected very badly in their previous
very lives. Admirable. Of course, you tell them that there's no money in journalism, right? Okay, very admirable. Soacha is, for those of you who don't know, it's a vast barrio in the south of Bogota, and of course many problems, many gangs, and of course rising up out of that is that there are whole communities of displaced people being sort of rehoused there, but also alongside what they call here the reinsertados, you know, the demobilized guerrillas or the demobilized members of what were formerly called the paramilitaries are also being placed in Soacha. So you're having various different groups, all within reasonably close proximity to one another, which again is creating another complex situation within the city itself. I mean, you're getting people who may well have, let's say, persecuted a community in the countryside, being reinserted into an urban situation just, let's say, a kilometer away from their, the people that harassed them. You know, the Colombian situation is so complex. I mean, of course, you grapple with it on a daily basis. But this about journalism, I'd never heard before. I'd never heard of anyone using journalism in this way. And I think, well, there's a lot to be learned from that. That is thinking outside the box. And is that with a local organization here in Colombia? I mean, is there someone dedicated to this?
It is. The organization is called PANDI. And yes, the project is about monitoring these issues of children affected by conflict in the mass media. Mm-hmm. That's one component of the project. Another component of the project is working with these children to teach them about journalism and to teach them about their rights, to teach them how they can promote their rights also through journalism.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting an image sort of the City of God movie, you know, with the kid in the favela with his camera, a little bit like that.
Sure.
Something similar could happen in Soacha. I mean, it's not a. I know that from my studies, I studied here at the Javeriana conflict resolution last year, and they have a project out there as well to help the reinserted people from various things. I know there are a lot of projects in Soacha. Yeah. But so you seem to do a great deal of work on the really impoverished areas, though. I'm talking the Pacific Coast, the Chocó. For those who don't know, is in the sort of northern section of the Pacific Coast. It's got the highest incidence of rainfall in the world. It's so mega diverse when it comes to the flora and fauna. I mean, this should be like an ecotourism paradise, and little sections of it are the ones that you can get to. It's out there in towns like called Nuki, Bahia Malaga, Bahia Solano, Bahia Malaga, I don't believe it's in the Chocó, it's just south of it, but it's out of it before I'm corrected on that. But these are places that have been visited, I have visited, they are wonderful places to visit, but I don't think you should ever leave or lose sight of what's happening around these areas. You know, we can come out to Colombia, we can enjoy the ecotourism, we can enjoy the bird watching, the whale watching, the government's pushing, but there are, you know, there's a really harsh reality within a kilometer, even less, around these towns. So we're going to continue on this theme with Ramin Shazamani, who's the director of War Child here in Colombia. We're going to keep talking about his projects and you know, this really creative thought process of how to go about improving a situation for Colombia's afflicted children. So don't go away. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control healthcare, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking to Ramin Shazamani, the director of War Child here in Columbia. And we've been talking a little bit about the really just harsh situation taking place and the complexities of the conflict. And of course, you know, the post-conflict, the people who have been drawn out of the conflict, what do we do with them? And in particular, you know, War Child deals with the children, you know, the next generation, the generation that has seen so much and is scarred, but needs to, you know, will need to be nurtured to move forward. And so we've been talking about the Choco, and we've been talking about Soacha, and we're talking, I think I'm going to move a little bit on towards a bit of politics here, and I know that you probably, as a director of an NGO, you've got to be rather apolitical, but I'm just going to ask, how do you see the peace dialogues between the FARC and the government that are taking place in Havana at the moment? How do you see this affecting your work as a director of War Child?
Well, I think this potentially could have a big impact on our work. Right now, it is difficult to say, really, because as you know, the dialogues are nobody really knows what's going on in the dialogues. All we know is that two of the key points have been discussed and they've come to some kind of agreement. And now they're talking about the third point, which is the illicit drugs. We have hope, and we want to see the peace process be fruitful. And when we talk to the organizations and the people that we work with in these different regions, everybody is anticipating and hoping for a real peace process that will be successful, but that will also address many of the issues that caused the conflict and allow this country to move forward. And I don't think anybody's under the illusion that even if a peace process comes to a signed agreement, that there will be real peace the day after or even the year after. Because, for one, there are other armed groups. And so this could potentially even create a vacuum, or the FARC could break down into different smaller groups as well. And it could actually increase, in the short term, the violence, let's say. But talking to the people, and my own perspective is that there is no other solution other than a dialogue process. So this is a good thing, and it's what the country is going through. But I think we have to be very careful, and the international community has to be very careful, in the sense that we have to put in a continued process in Colombia to make sure that this process has a chance of succeeding. And then we have to invest in Colombians and in Colombian children, especially in rural communities, but also in the cities, so that the people that have been affected by the conflict can feel like there is a better future for them. And that the children and the people that were involved in the conflict see a different path and see a different future. I think after more than 50 years, we can agree that there is no military solution to this conflict. So there is no other way. So for our work specifically, we actually think that there will be a greater need, unfortunately, for the work after the peace process is signed, because hopefully some of the children will leave these armed groups and come out, and they will need to be reintegrated into society. There will be a lot of healing that needs to be done between communities and within communities, and this work is not something that can be done as quickly. It will take many, many years. And hopefully with the economic growth of Colombia, which is what is taking place in Colombia, which is the very positive thing in this country, the economic growth and the opportunities that will bring, along with a peace process, hopefully will give this country a real chance at having a peaceful future.
Now, we were talking a little bit about the lack of sort of opportunities for children, and so therefore they can be easily exploited by any group, just a criminal gang that can exploit them. And I just brings to mind two examples which I've had personal experience of. one side was that in Cali, there was a massive demobilization of all young children from Buenaventura, and they all promised wages to join the FARC, and they all did. And then the second one was, I was thinking, you know, a new up-and-coming tourist destination, which is in Meta, called Caño Cristales, the River of Seven Colors. You'll have seen it on the, you know, in the glossy magazines. I'm partly responsible for that, but you'll see in these places. And all of the guides there worked formerly as like coca leaf pickers. Mm-hmm. There were no opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now they've been placed as guides. You know, these young, dynamic individuals who know the countryside better than anyone else have been placed into a situation where they are going to be the best. And I think that's something very positive. And one thing that I've learned over the years being here and reading about and interviewing, like I said, demobilized people, is that they're always complaining that they're when they're taken out, you know, of these situations, or they let's say surrender arms or decide to leave or escape from the situation or from the guerrillas or the BACRIM, the newly formed armed groups, the breakaways from the paramilitaries and so on. They always say, oh yeah, they put us into a bakery. What do we know about baking? You know, it's like, what? Shouldn't we be directing them towards things that perhaps they've learned about? Perhaps what they've learned off in the jungles, I'm not saying that, you know, the nefarious acts that they've learned and seen, but, you know, these people know about reforestation and they know about, let's say, trail maintenance. We've got to be thinking more openly about these opportunities. This is where you come in, right? I mean, this is War Child.
I mean, it can be the future. I think it's very important to note that in Colombia, there is a government process which takes in children that have been affected, that have been involved in armed groups. Mm-hmm. And this is done under ICBF. Mm-hmm. So ICBF will take these children and will take them into these centers. Mm-hmm. Until they are 18. Of course, this service for these children can be improved. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that should be improved, that should be looked at, is what they want to do in the future. Mm-hmm. And what skills do they need or in order to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying would, I think, go into that process. There is a challenge, is that when children reach 18 and they're known as adults, then they have to leave these centers. Mm-hmm. And they are almost thrown in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's not as if the Colombian community yet receives these people with open arms. So I think in the healing and the change process that needs to take place in Colombia is, hopefully with the peace process, people will consciously make decisions that these are Colombians and we need to accept and take in these Colombians and have a peaceful future as a result.
So the rehabilitation and reparation, exactly. I mean, these are the key words to this. And have you dealt a great deal with, let's say, child combatants?
Yes, we've had a number of projects. Mm-hmm. That have worked with ex-child combatants. Mm-hmm. And the projects have focused on the psychosocial support for these children, because they have witnessed and been part of things that no child should be a part of. Mm-hmm. So, it's been a big part of our work. Mm-hmm.
Have you got any anecdotes? Well, actually, before we get onto anecdotes, off the top of your head, do you have any figures about the number of child combatants here in Colombia between the different armed groups? Or, I mean, just off the top of your head.
Numbers are very, very difficult to know.
Yes.
And they range anywhere between 5,000 and 14,000. So the range is very large. What we do know more specifically is the number of children that have come out. Mm-hmm. And have entered the ICBF system.
Yes.
Which is over 5,000 children already.
That's a lot of children.
That is a lot of children, and I think we can safely say that a large number of children that came out of groups never entered the system, official system.
Mm-hmm.
So it is almost deceiving to think that 5,000 that have come out gives a real good indication of the children that we're involving.
We can talk of the success story of the 5,000, but of the others who have sort of, let's say, slipped through that net. And then there's a huge gap as well, and it worried me a lot when you mentioned that 18, they have to leave the system. And it's almost like a state-sponsored abandonment. I mean, it's like, right, you're 18, yeah. That's it, you're done.
Well, to be fair, once these children reach 18, legally, the obligation of the state ends. However, they are given a certain amount of economic resources afterwards.
Okay.
But kids that have been in armed groups and what they know, the skills that they have is not how to manage money within a city and find a job within a city, doesn't necessarily mean that we'll have success with this strategy. So I think an obligation that the government has and agencies have is to look and see how to make this a success, especially with the peace process, because that is what will ultimately say whether we've reached success or not, is whether the children, the youth, and also I would say the adults that have been involved in our groups can reintegrate successfully into society.
Yeah, I imagine so. Now, do you have any anecdotes, obviously without naming names, of success stories that we can think about? Like a child, I mean, girl, boy, whatever, you want to share it, that you say, listen, we're doing a good thing.
Well, I and Wosha will never take credit for anything that has been done, because the work is actually done by the children themselves and by many other organizations. So it is collective work with the government, with other agencies, and the majority of the work is done by the children themselves. But there are many examples. I can give you one example of a girl who left the armed groups and entered the disability system, and then had some support from our organization and from other organizations. And she was able to go back to university. First of all, she finished high school, went to university, became a nurse, and is now a nurse here in Bogota.
Fantastic.
And is a very productive member of society, has a child, takes care of her child, and actually tries to support other children that are in this process. So there are many, many examples like hers. These are intelligent young people that all they need is the support of people and organizations and the government.
And do you find, let's say, that a lot of people coming out like this, coming out of the groups, when they're back in society, they want to help, they want to be a productive member of society, they want to be nurses or things of that nature, or social workers, or...
I think it's hard to generalize as to what they want to do. Every individual is different.
Of course.
But the things that I have heard personally is that many times these children that are now growing up and becoming youth and adults do have a consciousness about what they've done, and they do want to make better, and they sometimes they do it through social services. For example, this young girl that I was telling you about, I remember vividly, she said, "I love my work because I am in a way giving back to society what I took away when I was in the conflict."
Wow.
So it is a very conscious effort of her doing her job to the best that she can.
Well, I thank you so much for your time, Ramin Chazamani. I think it's been really interesting and it's been a very open interview. You've really told us about some realities here in Colombia, and I'd just like to say thank you. And we can look up the website, that's warchild.ca, warchild.nl is your group, the Dutch one, and of course I'm sure the donations are well received on there, and there is a 90, I've been assured that 90 cents from every dollar goes straight into the projects, which is a very high percentage for those of you who know NGOs and how it all works. And so thank you for your time. Thank you for your humility. I mean, really, you've been telling it how it is, and I think a lot of people will go away from this interview enriched by the information. And of course, we have to be positive about the future in Colombia. So thank you once again.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm Richard McCall. This has been Colombia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/StarRewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.